Welcome back to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. On today's show, we have Tim Sillison. Tim is Dialight's VP of Sales, overseeing global sales as well as marketing and customer service operations to drive revenue growth and develop strategies to expand Dialight's market share. Tim began his career as a product development engineer, where he gained valuable experience in developing and testing instrumentation products for various industrial markets. Eventually moving to work at Siemens as a product manager for instrumentation and quickly rising the ranks to become their head of sales and marketing for the prior. I hear Tim laughing in the background, but for the process, I always laugh at these things too, guys. But you know what? It is what it is. It's a bio. Process Safety Division, leading sales and marketing teams and developing solutions to increase safety in some of the toughest markets. Throughout his career, Tim has consistently demonstrated his ability to drive business growth and develop effective sales and marketing strategies. His extensive experience in both engineering and sales has given him a unique perspective on how to develop and market innovative products that meet customer needs, Greg. You know, before we get into it, we got to go to KYSTONETECH.com. That's KeystoneTech.com, Greg Eric. Light made easy.
That's right, we do. So right now I'm working on a parking lot car dealership. And, you know, when you get into that, sometimes they're pointing in different directions and you need different distribution patterns. You know what? With Keystone, you can do one fixture now. They've got their optic swap, which gives you type 3, type 4, type 5, all in the same fixture, 3K, 4K, 5K, Kelvin selectable, and then a lot of times power selectable as well. So three different lumen packages. And they can even do white and bronze. And a lot of times you need white in those car dealerships.
Sure, true. So, yeah, you do need white sometimes for those cars. I love car dealerships, man. Those are some of my favorite applications. Just trying to get them to turn the lights off at around 11, though. It's really tough. They want to leave those lights blasting all night long. So the, you know, but you know, I just love to do a good parking car dealership parking lot. And of course, Greg, the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors, where it all started. Our convention is coming up, and we're about to talk a lot about sustainability here. And who's better than Brian Huff and our sustainability committee and the letters they put out and the new committee we just did on accreditation agencies and all the stuff that's happening at NAILD? If you're a lighting distributor, you should join us. Go to NAILD.org. Welcome to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, Tim.
Well, thanks, guys. I really appreciate you guys inviting me on today.
So we read your bio. Give us a quick 1 minute on Dialight, you know, where it came from and what they're doing.
Sure. Dialight's been in the LED business since the early 70s. Prior to that, we did a lot of lighting for military and aircraft. The Dialight is the old dials on the aircraft for World War II. Mm. In the 1970s, we got into LED, street lights, traffic lights, walk, don't walk signs. And then throughout the years, we got into white lighting, really in the 2008 timeframe. And that's where we got into the industrial lighting for white LEDs.
So you guys, one of the key words here is industrial. And a lot of times industrial and commercial is interchanged. Mm-hmm. You know, I do it myself. You know, like I had to, what type of building is it? I don't know. It's commercial. It's industrial. But they are very different, right? And tell us what that's all about.
Sure. And where we focus primarily is in the harsh and hazardous. So the more harsh, the more hazardous, the more our value proposition really resonates with the customer. So typical vertical markets for us is oil and gas, chemical, petrochemical, power generation, food and beverage, harsh washdown environments, where commercial lighting, IP66, IP67 just won't hold up to the to the
mines?
Application.
You guys do mines?
Oh yeah, a ton of mining. Mm-hmm. Australia, we're really big in mining in Australia and the western half of the U.S. We do a lot of gold, copper, silver mining.
You're going to say that LED is great and it's supposed to be the right answer, but is it really in these hazardous locations? Because HID did pretty damn good for a lot of years.
HID does well. The challenge with it is it just doesn't last. You know, the bulbs and ballasts need to be replaced. And in these harsh and hazardous environments, changing a light bulb is a very challenging and safety risked event, especially when you get into a hazardous location, a class one division one or a class one division two, where there's explosive environment all the time. And so to change a light bulb is not as simple as getting a ladder and changing a light fixture. You're looking at steel mill as an example when, you know, you may have to shut down the facility to change a light fixture. And so the sustainability piece, I think, needs to be looked at in a couple of ways. Certainly sustainability is very important, not only for the lighting industry, but in the world in general. But we also need to look at reliability, because I don't think you can have a really sustainable solution unless it's a reliable solution. If you're constantly changing something, you're constantly working, you're spending a lot of energy doing something that you shouldn't be doing. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we do at Dialight, we spend a lot of time on reliability, because the longer a light fixture can burn, the less carbon, the less everything that you're expending.
And I think that's true to some point for sure. But how about also the ability to replace it in the future? And I think that's what I always struggle with, especially
Hang on. Let me clarify that question. I think what Greg's asking is field maintainability. Is that what you're asking? As opposed to replacing a fixture. That the problem is that all these fixtures need to be ripped out and replaced. That I think that's so. Sure. Can I just dial the conversation back a little bit?
Sure.
I want to ask you, Tim, what sustainability, like that's a word that's thrown around. There was a time when the CFL was sustainable. There was a symbol of green CFLs, right? There, so now that's transitioned from being the symbol to being the one thing we want to get rid of in lighting, right? Is mercury. So to you, I mean, what is sustainability in lighting to you?
So sustainability is having a light fixture that works in an application for a very long period of time. Now, it can be replaced. You can replace the power supply or the driver. You can replace the light engine if that's your desire. Again, in the harsh environment or a hazardous environment, you really can't have a customer replacing those parts and make sure that that fixture gets sealed properly so that it maintains the IP protection or the explosion-proof certifications on that fixture. Again, in a warehouse, I think having replaceable drivers, replaceable light engines certainly makes a lot of sense. And we did it in our office here. Right? We changed out the fluorescent bulbs, put in LED tubes and removed the ballast, and, you know, life's good. So the fixture itself can be maintained. We do have products where you can replace the power supply. They're non-hazardous fixtures instead of our hazardous fixtures. So we do have options for customers that do want that maintainability of a light fixture.
So durability and reliability are what you're suggesting are the essence of sustainable in this hazardous environment, because really maintenance is you want to get what kind of life cycle. Actually, life cycle, not lifetime of, for in your case, the life cycle is the life source lifetime. So what is the life cycle that you guys project on your products when you're selling them in these hazardous locations?
So our standard warranty is 10 years. So we maintain that at least 10 years. Projections of 15 to 17 years, depending on the application, of course. But some of our first fixtures that we put in 2006, and that was back when we had a 5-year warranty, are still burning.
And these are LED fixtures?
LED fixtures.
And they're in tough requirements, tough environments kind of thing?
That's in a kind of a food and beverage. So it's not high heat, high humidity, not a lot of environmental challenges, but it's a industrial application. I would say it's a lighter industrial application. But we have fixtures that have been in for 10, 12 years in harsh environments, and they continue to burn.
The 10-year warranty thing is something that has become a bit of an issue between the lighting industry and, you know, want is the right word, but there sort of is a undertone of maybe rolling that back as an industry, you know, and saying, just simply because of all the failures, I'm going to be quite frank with you.
Sure.
I mean, purple lights all over the place. You know, there's a lot of issues that are now emerging after, you know, the Kool-Aid was drank and everyone went wild. You know, so why is it that you're maintaining this 10-year warranty position? What's different about Dialyte?
So I think there's three or four different things that we do from a product design perspective and then also from a manufacturing perspective. So one of the things that is pretty unique for us is we develop and design our own power supplies. Mm-hmm. So we don't use a commercial off-the-shelf available power supply. So we can design the power supply for that longevity. We can use the right components, the right mix of components to build a power supply that's designed for 10 years. We can also design it for the application that it's in. If it's in a high bay versus an area light versus a linear, they have different heat patterns and you have different lights, heat sources from the fixture. So you know where to move the heat, because really in a power supply, it's components and heat. If you can get the heat away from the power supply, the electronics are going to last longer. So designing the power supply along with the fixture itself, you can optimize that thermal management. And I think that's pretty important. I think on the testing side, we do a tremendous amount of testing. I'm here in our corporate headquarters in New Jersey. You know, we have environmental chambers a mile long. Can't say really how far it is, but that we test these fixtures in an accelerated life cycle to make sure that what we're designing and what we're producing can last that 10-year plus. Then in the factory, we do things like pressure decay tests on the housings, make sure they don't leak. Water intrusion in the industrial environment is really tough. You get water in the conduit and then it gets into the light fixture. So things like that allow a customer to feel that the 10 years is really legitimate. We also had, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the National Lighting Bureau and their trusted warranty program.
Sure. Yeah, I think it's great.
I do too. They came in. I was really impressed with the audit that they did, mm-hmm. And how far and how deep and wide they go, not just from the warranty and the paperwork side, but really looking at how you look at warranty. What do you do when you have a warranty issue? What are the corrective actions that are taking place? How does that feed back into the design of the product or into the manufacturing of the process? So I think that's really important for our industry, because I agree, there's a lot of blue lights, purple lights out there that shouldn't be. But that's, you know, people overdriving things or not matching a light engine with a power supply with a thermal management process. And that kills a light fixture every time.
You know, this industry, Greg, and I'm going to throw it over to Greg for a question. I'm just going to make a comment here. But this industry has to stop qualifying products and start qualifying companies and educating people. You know, it's like, how can you label a fixture to be quality before it has an application? It doesn't make any sense, Greg.
I'm with you on that. One of the questions I have, and I always am interested in this, is the temperature when it comes to extreme applications. Mm. What is the highest temp you have seen in a field application? And try to do it in U.S. terms so I can understand it, not Celsius over there.
Celsius.
You'll have to calculate it for me.
So not too long ago, I was at a facility where one of our area lights, and it was so hot that the polycarbonate, which melts at 240 degrees Fahrenheit, was melting.
Hmm.
Wow. That's pretty hot. We don't warranty up to 240 degrees, but it was still working. And that's really the thermal management of the light fixture. How do you get the heat away from the electronics? That's so important. But I agree that the whole industry needs an education. I don't want to bring up your last podcast, but one of the last ones you talk about was having lighting people that really understand applications. And that's so important, putting the right fixture.
Tim, the one-for-one swap out has promoted amateurism over expertise. It's not only that, there's a whole generation of lighting people that have come up with take down, put up, see this and take it. They don't even think in terms of redesign, re-engineering, specification. They look at a list. Is it on the list? Mm-hmm. They put it up. And never mind mentoring. So we've been promoting amateurism over expertise, and the expertise has been devalued, And the, you know, and now you have people that have been in the industry for 10 years and they have no idea how to assess the lighting system for performance.
Well, one of the things that we do with our salespeople, because one of the selling attributes that we have is with the optics that we design into our fixtures, there's a lot of times we can put in one fixture that'll cover two existing.
Yeah.
So now you've cut your lighting fixture. Now you're more sustainable because you're using less lighting fixtures. You have a better design. You have less to maintain. So it's basic education that I think our industry needs to step up.
It's also incentives, though, like the incentives. And I'm leaking out all the work that the Accreditation Agency Advisory Committee, I had a sneak preview of their, we have an advisory committee that put together a report. They're deciding whether or not they're going to release it now. But so I kind of have the knowledge now, and there's nothing I can do about it, like what these guys came up with. But, you know, our incentives are perverse. You know, if you're in that environment where you have those two fixtures, the incentive, the rebate is higher to change out two lights. So keep the two lights there and put in the new lights, Greg. And that's unsustainable as well. And you know what else is not sustainable? Our relationship with our customers, Greg. I mean, you know, that's the most important sustainable piece that I want to keep is the goodwill between my company and the companies we serve. Greg, did you have a question or do you want me to move on?
Yeah, just one more. I'm sure. Still in this temp thing. So you said you don't go up to 240. What do you go up to?
149, 65C.
149. And what do you tell people that you can safely do the product in? Do you say that or do you say, like I've run into 160, 165. You're no issue there?
So we have UL and CSA certified products that are only good for those temperature ranges. So we can't recommend anything above that from a light fixture perspective and still maintain the certifications. We do have some products. Go ahead.
I was going to say from an LED fixture or from any fixture?
We only sell LED fixtures. So Dialight only does LED fixtures.
I think there's HID in that application. Did you guys sell HID in the past?
No, never.
Okay.
Never. So white lighting, everything we've done in white lighting has been LED since really about 2008.
Got it.
Okay. You good, Greg? All right.
I got my temperature questions. Sorry.
You got your temperature questions out of the way? Okay. So let's talk about, differentiation for you guys. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you're in this tough environment, you know, has location sort of stuff. When you're out in the field, do you train, do you work through distribution? Do you sell through distribution? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how do you train your distributors to know the difference between your products and someone else's products? Or is it all specified in by engineers and specifiers?
Yes. The answer is yes. A little bit of everything. So we do a lot of training with our distributors. We also have manufacturers reps, third-party reps that also assist with the training of outside and inside sales. And I think it's important to recognize the inside salespeople too, because they get probably more technical questions from the field than just the outside salespeople. So we spend a tremendous amount of time training our inside outside salespeople of our distributors. But we also, I have a pretty big team of direct salespeople that go out and specify with the end customer, with the engineer, with the contractor, the consulting firm, to specify our products as well. So it's a hand-holding apparatus, if you will, at the end customer with the distributor, the engineering firm, and the Dialight salespeople.
Now, it talks about here in some of the stuff we have, you wanted to speak about the environmental goals of your customers. What exactly does that mean? And I often hear these terms, and I think everybody assumes everybody knows what they mean. I don't know what an environmental goal is for a hazardous location industrial factory. What is that?
So most of it is greenhouse gas reduction. How do they reduce their greenhouse gas emissions or consumption? So part of our education for our customers is explaining how lighting contributes to greenhouse gases, contributes to carbon emissions. I'm sure you guys are familiar with the EPDs, the environmental product declarations, that are something that's coming more from Europe, but it's coming into the Americas pretty quickly. And that's really defining how much carbon is consumed by making the product itself. So you can have two area lights. You can look at them and say, okay, this one versus this one. This one has a higher carbon impact. So when they're building a facility or relighting a facility, one of the considerations is how much carbon is it taking to actually build that light fixture? And it over a lifetime, is it paying for itself in carbon? Not just in the ROI, TCO, and ROI. It's really how much carbon is consumed just making that light fixture.
I want to know who's going to be. I want to know who's going to be the carbon police. That's what I want to know. I mean, I don't mean to be. I don't mean to be like sound pithy, but you know,
sure.
There's so many different accreditations now. And it's getting to be, you know, a touch. What always strikes me as odd is that the lighting industry is not actually dictating what these accreditations should be. It seems to be coming from the outside. And I think that, you know, when I look at this and, you know, I'm not against, you know, people trying to have less pollution, trying to be greener, and I'm all for it. You know, I'm there with you. But I'm wondering, if there's going to be effective, if we're going to do this and Dialyte's going to be a leader, or, you know, Keystone's mm-hmm. going to be a leader, whoever it is, you know, if they're going to be a leader, they're going to put the effort into it. They're going to make all these different changes to their processes and all this sort of stuff. Is there going to be some kind of enforcement on this? Because if there isn't any enforcement, then what happens is we crush the compliers and those that are cheaters seem to prosper. And so from my perspective, Greg, if we're going to introduce these programs or these accreditation programs, you know, the other thing too is, how do we, and I'm on this right now because I've just been reading something, how do we actually know that the accreditation, whether it's this carbon accreditation or whether it's some sort of energy efficiency mark like DLC or whatever, I think everybody knows that UL does safety, electrical safety, right? But, you know, how do we not confuse the customers? Because some of these accreditations are not actually certifying what the customer thinks they're certifying. You know what I'm saying? And so when you say that it's carbon, what does that mean? Does it mean it's manufactured in the United States? It doesn't travel on a container ship over from China? Does it mean that children didn't make it or something? Like, what is it actually, what are these marks telling us? And if you have so many marks on a fixture, UL, DLC, whatever this new one is now. You know what I mean? The actual manufacturer's label starts to shrink in brand power. You know what I mean? And you want that Dialyte name to be the name that people are looking to for quality, not all these different labels that are being slapped on the box. How do we overcome that as an insurer? Can we, Tim?
That's a great question. There's a lot in that question. You know, I think that if you start with the basics, and I think we all agree that less carbon is good, less emissions is better, all those things.
Less pollution is better, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So if we, the more we talk about it, I think the more people will focus. Are we ever going to get to a point that there is a good housekeeping seal of approval from the carbon police or carbon entities? I don't know. I think that's going to be a very difficult, and it's even hard to measure. I mean, even some of the goals that we have, you know, if you use recycled aluminum versus virgin aluminum, is that, do you get bonus points for using recycled aluminum versus virgin? Or,
that's a good question.
You know, all those things. There's a ton of those questions out there. But the fact that we're even having that discussion means we've moved at least forward. Mm-hmm. We're not standing still. I think the industry has a long way to go. And it's, you know, if you think about just lighting, and everything that goes into lighting, right? Lighting is just a light, but you've got wire, you've got copper, you've got conduit, sure. You've got switches, you've got circuit breakers, you've got power distribution, all that stuff just to turn on a light fixture. So I think if we in the lighting industry start leading that discussion, one of the things that I talk about with my salespeople a lot, especially on new design, is looking at LED versus conventional lighting and the size of wire you need, the number of circuit breakers that you need, you can reduce the whole, not just the light fixture. Don't look at just the light fixture. Look at the installation of the lighting system and how much savings can you have, whether it's environmental savings or a cost savings or an energy savings. And I think that's where we as an industry need to stand up as a collection and start demanding this of ourselves.
Yeah, well, I think this is why I love what the NLB did. And you know, we've actually spoken to many of our vendors in Nailed, and they all brought that up on their own. Like most of them came forward and said, you know, we really like this process, actually, that, you know, the way that they did it. And we think this is very healthy for the lighting industry. And, you know, that's because it's done by lighting people. Right. And so you have people that actually know how the lighting industry works and where we could improve as a team, because at the end we're competitors, but we're also an industry that has a reputation as a whole. And where that leadership coming, and NLB, Greg, NLB is a small lighting association. I mean, they are among the smallest. I mean, Nailed small, they're small. There's a couple others that are really small. But NLB is, and I really think that was a fantastic program. And I think it's a great starting point for the industry to really start to take back charge of our destiny here and say, no, you know, hey, we love you third parties, but maybe you should listen to the people that know how to make light fixtures, like Dialyte, for example. Maybe they should not be a stakeholder committee. Maybe they need to be on the board of directors, actually, you know? And so I really think that as an industry, we can move in that direction and prioritize the quality of brands and manufacturers and their histories in the industry and whether or not they effectively manage their warranties and serve customers. And perhaps we could even create like a warranty arbitration panel in the industry where, run by an NLB or a Nailed or whatever, where, you know, instead of going to court, first we go to arbitration. And because it's not, listen, customers don't always install lights in the right application. It's not always the manufacturer's fault. You know, Greg, and that was a big complaint as well from the advisory committee, the committee we did with the vendors. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things. A lot of sustainability is one of those words, and you had it written all over your talking points here. But I think there's also the sustainability of the lighting industry, like not creating accreditations that allow Johnny Come Lately and the lighting marauders to just swoop in, unannounced. And with a container from Shenzhen, and now he's got tough requirements and Hasloc and whatever because he checked the paperwork off. We have to make sure. I'm serious. This is happening. And
well,
go ahead.
I was gonna say, especially in the hazardous location side, if something goes wrong, bad things happen.
Mm-hmm.
Really bad things. Mm-hmm. And you know, in my previous career, I worked in process safety, and that's the investigation of when things go really bad. And mm-hmm. So a light fixture, you're putting something in there and you got to think of those 2,000 employees that work at that chemical plant or that refinery. You want to make darn sure that what you're putting in there is the safest thing you can, mm-hmm. period.
Absolutely.
Because that's sustainability goes into people and safety. And
not causing fires.
Yes, it's kind of important.
Yeah.
But I think safety is an aspect that we don't also talk about enough in the lighting industry.
Amen.
I joke a lot about most of our customers don't know what good lighting is until they have it.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in more and more facilities that is the worst lighting, but they don't know any different because it's been that way for 30 years.
Mm.
And then you bring in a good quality light, 5,000 Kelvin, 80 CRI, and oh my gosh, look how dirty this place is. I didn't know it was this dirty. It's our biggest complaint is how dirty their facilities are after we relight them.
Mm.
But that's the way they've done it for 30 years.
Mm.
We just did a water wastewater project, and the plant manager said, this is the only place I could invest a dollar in light. Investing in lighting was the only place I can invest a dollar and the morale of the entire organization changed.
Amen. Yep, that's so true.
And I thought, wow, that's pretty powerful because they didn't know. They just don't know. And that's unfortunate.
And I guess kind of going lighting geek is what I wanted to do, but you guys segued it nicely for me with this hazardous location. So I can't tell you how many sites I've been in, including one yesterday, where I was in a room that had explosion-proof fixtures or hazardous location mm-hmm. fixtures. And I try to ask the question, what class div do you need? And they never know. You know, and the only way you can ever find out is to go up there. I used to see things on the wall. Is there some resource or something you can help lighting dorks like me teach people about what it is? Like if they have this chemical, I know there's charts, but how do we easily determine what kind of class div they need?
You look at the old light fixture, Greg, and you read the label on it.
I know that, but come on, it's some high up there. And give us
typically
a
it's
easy one.
The area classifications is based on their insurance. So a lot of times it's the insurance companies that come in and say, this area is class one div one, this one's class one div two. But there is a chart that shows and the difference between class one div one and class one div two. In a div one environment, under normal conditions, it's an explosive atmosphere. In a class one division two, in an abnormal situation, meaning something else broke, it could become hazardous. And there's two different protection schemes between those two light fixtures. One has to contain the explosion. If gas gets inside there and heats up enough, acetylene is one of the lowest temperature rating. If it leaks in the fixture, it has to contain the explosion. And that's where you get real thick glass. But typically in a class one division one, if you're in a class one division one environment, you're not alone and you're probably carrying a respirator or some other protection to be in that environment. Otherwise, it's probably division two.
Ah, interesting. Okay.
And do some of your fixtures, and I was looking at your website, do they cover multiple class or multiple divs?
Sure.
The same fixture?
Yeah. So, you can have class one division two and class two division one. A lot of times they're combined. And the class two division one is more for dust environment. So a grain elevator as an example, or something that's really explosive from a dust perspective. And then you have to do special things on the lenses for anti-static so that you don't create a static charge on a polycarbonate lens so that it can attract all that dust and then heat up. And sugar is another good class two division one environment.
And if they repurpose a room and they don't think they need it, I should tell them, let's get it from your insurance and hear that first.
Is that right? Or the safety officer, the safety department will know. And we usually try to work with the safety departments in addition, not just for the area classification, but also to ask where they're having slips, trips, and falls. Because a lot of times that's poor lighting, that somebody can't see the hazard or, you know, hit their head on something low hanging. So we work with safety a lot just to identify where they're having problems.
What is the most common on average class div?
Class one division two is the most common for us.
I don't think I've ever seen a div one. You know, I got to find one because I love lighting. Because I get to see all
these things.
Yeah.
Come to Houston.
I've been in a... I think I had. No, I was in a mine in Hinton, Alberta, where they crushed up the coal. Actually, that one was a div one. Yes, I had to wear a respirator. Actually, now that I remember it, yeah. Because you wouldn't believe it. You're in this thing, and they start to roll these chunks of coal into this crushing machine, and the whole building starts to rattle. It's unbelievable, man. It's unbelievable to see. And I told them this was 5 years ago or 10 years ago, maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, and I told them there's no LED that's going to work. At that time, maybe I was wrong. I'm like, there's never going to be an LED that works in here, I told them.
Well, that's a great example of a tough environment, vibration, high vibration, high shock. One of the things that we do that differentiate ours is we encapsulate in a potting material the entire power supply. So now it's kind of is vibration proof. Now it's just one big glob so that during a shake or vibration, it doesn't, because you get into some of those really tough applications. A coal crusher is a great example. A drill rig, an offshore platform, a work boat that's working out in the Gulf of Mexico. They're taking shock and vibration, water and salt water, sailors. So there's all kinds of stuff that really make it a tough application for any lighting. I don't, you can look at HID or LED. You put it on a high vibration, high shock, that's a tough environment.
Sure. Yeah, it sure is. Tim, we've had a great talk here, I feel like. Anyway, if I look at all the points that we got, I think we covered them all. And I've really enjoyed this. Is there any final thoughts you have for Get a Grip on Lighting listeners out there?
No, I appreciate you guys inviting us on. I really enjoy your show. I'm an
Thank
avid
you.
watcher, and you need to get a little bit more on the industrial side, and let's talk more on the harsh and hazardous over the years. But I actually learn a lot as well. So I think you guys are doing a good thing for the industry, and I want to thank you both because I know it's a lot of time and effort that you guys put in. And thanks for inviting us, and hopefully we'll get to do it again.
Well, we do it for the same reason. We've learned so much, Greg, and over the years, but we want to invite you all right now, listen, to go to KeystoneTech.com, the Big Easy, Greg Eric.
That's right. I got it on my sleeve here. Or, no, I don't. There it
It's
is.
on
Greg
your
Made
belt.
Easy.
Yeah.
There we go. Optic swap on the area light makes it easy when you're out there selling. You can change to different distribution types, 345, Kelvin type, 345, and lumens, whatever they are, three or
And
four.
of Greg, we're going to be in Dallas next September, cheering it up with ArcLight again. America's Lighting Convention. We're going to take a tour of the Dallas Cowboys Stadium, and then we're also going to talk a lot about light bulbs. That's right, and light fixtures. And maybe we could do a hazardous one. Maybe we could do an educational session on hazardous. I think that would be
I
a
would love
that'd
it.
be yeah, that would be
Yeah,
interesting.
I'd love it.
So, yeah, so go to NAILD.org, folks. That's right. Check us out. We are kicking ass and taking names. That's right. That's what we do, because we are frontline lighting practitioners. That's right. We sell to the end user customer. So we get stuck in the middle and we say, oh my gosh, we should really improve. And that's why I really like NLB's Trusted Warranty Program. I think it's a great thing for the industry, something we can build upon. But for right now, we thank you, all the listeners and watchers out there. We don't have listeners and watchers. We only have colleagues that don't do this podcast. So thanks to you. Thanks to Tim. Thanks to Dialight. Thanks to Greg Eric. Thanks to Keystone. Thanks to Neil. Thanks to everybody. Bye for now.